Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hey, welcome back to another week of Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Myers & Associates, serving the Midwest with industrial maintenance products and services. Call them at 515-795-3676. Myers & Associates, keeping your operations running. Hey, this is Shane Vanderhart. I've got Brian Myers doing air drums.
You've missed that, haven't you?
I have. I haven't seen that in a while. So that's awesome to see. And it's good that you're going to be back with us for a while now.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what.
Watch, you'll probably get sick next week.
No. Oh, no.
Don't even say such a thing. Listen, the last 2 weeks, we were talking about this off the air, the last 2 weeks have been as jam-packed with news events
right. As
any that I can remember in a long, long time. We have a lot to talk about today, and a lot of it is not going to be fun to talk about, but it is what it is.
Yeah, it definitely is. So we're going to get right to it. We've got a special guest on the line, Christiana Holcomb. She's legal counsel for Alliance Defending Freedom. Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, Christiana.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
So basically, we discovered this week that Fort Des Moines Church of Christ is basically suing the Iowa Civil Rights Commission, along with the Attorney General and I think the Executive Director of the commission, as well as the commissioners, and then I don't know if there's anybody else in there. I think there was I feel like I'm missing somebody.
There's a laundry list of people getting sued.
Right.
Yeah, the city of Des Moines was in there as well.
Okay, all right.
But no, you're exactly right. So we filed a lawsuit on behalf of Fort Des Moines Church of Christ against the parties that you named because these entities are interpreting a state civil rights law to apply to churches.
Okay.
Which, you know, sounds innocuous in and of itself, right? The law's been on the books since 2007, not that big a deal. Well, that's not really the case. When you take a closer look, the Civil Rights Commission in particular is saying this applies to churches. And oh, by the way, when it does, pastors, you're not really allowed to preach about your beliefs on human sexuality. You're not allowed to do anything, frankly, that could be interpreted by anyone attending your church as unwelcoming based on their gender identity. But it goes beyond that, not just speech, but also facility use. So if churches are required to comply with this law, that means that churches are no longer allowed to have sex-specific restrooms, locker rooms, shower and changing facilities, which goes against their deeply held religious beliefs about God's good creation in designing us as male and female.
Right.
So Fort Des Moines Church of Christ, we filed a lawsuit on their behalf, pushing back against this and saying, look, this is unprecedented overreach, and this must be stopped.
And they haven't, just to be so our listeners are clear, they have not enforced this yet.
That's right. So this is called a pre-enforcement challenge. So one of the fantastic hallmarks of a civil rights society is we don't have to kind of cower in the corner or wait for the shoe to drop, be fined, punished, or imprisoned before we challenge an unconstitutional law. No, we as American citizens have the right to go into court to say, judge, there's an unconstitutional law on the books. We're fearful for our civil rights, and we're asking you to declare this unconstitutional to stop them from harming us. And so that's exactly what Alliance Defending Freedom has done on behalf of this church.
So what was the genesis of this with respect to the timing? If it's been around, if this law has been on the books since 2007, what brought this to the attention of the Fort Des Moines Church of Christ, or what was the genesis of getting you folks involved in bringing forth this lawsuit?
Sure. Well, the law has been on the books since 2007, but this particular interpretation of the law has not. And it was not until just late last year that Fort Des Moines Church of Christ learned that the commission had adopted this expansive interpretation of the law, applying it to churches, which frankly is unprecedented in America today. And secondly, applying it to bathrooms, locker rooms, shower and changing facilities, which, according to our contacts on the ground there in Iowa, said, look, that wasn't part of the discussion when the law passed back in 2007. So this is all new. It's kind of like they were biding their time, so to speak. And then with the current sort of changes that we've seen culturally, they figured, now's the time. We can sort of broaden this a little bit. We're going to start casting the nets wider, so to speak. So that's deeply troubling, deeply concerning to us, especially when you have this unelected commission, not really accountable to the people of the state of Iowa whatsoever,
right,
but yet is having such a harmful impact on their civil liberties.
Can you go ahead?
Yeah, the brochure, I wrote about this this week as well, and the brochure is called Sexual Orientation and Gender Identity, a Public Accommodations Provider's Guide to Iowa Law. And what surprised me is that I think this has actually been around since 2012, but it just kind of flew under the radar. But yeah, it's very eye-opening because I just, for the benefit of our listeners, I'll just read a part of it. It says, sometimes Iowa law provides that these protections do not apply to religious institutions with respect to any religion-based qualifications when such qualifications are related to a bona fide religious purpose. Where qualifications are not to a bona fide religious purpose, churches are still subject to the law's provisions, like a child care facility operated at the church or a church service, you mentioned, open to the public. So basically it's saying this law applies to churches unless you're doing worship service that's closed to your members, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So let's take a step back and really take in what's going on here. So this commission is saying, if you have a church service that's open to the public, as most church services are, mm-hmm. you're not engaging in a bona fide religious purpose. Therefore, the law applies to you. That's dumbfounding.
No,
absolutely appalling.
When I first read that, my reaction was, beam me up, Scotty. Maybe this was absolutely the most ridiculous thing that I could imagine. I need to stop saying that, because the absurd seems to become a reality daily anymore. But that's the definition of a public worship service, is to invite the public. I mean, how can that not be a bona fide purpose of the church?
And that's exactly right. And frankly, it shows an ignorance, I would say, on the part of the commission about what worship is, about what religious exercise is. All right, so let's say that they say, okay, you can have your religious worship, but everything else that takes place within your church is not a bona fide religious purpose. Well, no, actually, that's false. Everything a church does is infused with religious purpose and meaning. It uses its facility as an outworking of worship, as an outworking of exercise, and it's sort of a means of teaching and conveying its religious doctrine, even in how it operates its facilities. So churches are sacred spaces. They are set apart. They're not places of public accommodation, as you may hear the term thrown around in the law. They're places of worship, and they need to be treated differently under the law than, you know, a sandwich shop or other businesses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, and also something they mentioned, too, is how they define harassment is the use of the wrong pronoun.
Oh, boy.
I'm looking at the code, you know, looking at chapter 216 where this is located. I've read through it, and then I'm looking at the Iowa Constitution about the right to free speech, and I'm thinking the Constitution clearly states that, you know, we're responsible for abuse of our right. However, I can't see that the Iowa Constitution framers had in mind using a wrong pronoun.
No, that's exactly right. And if you look particularly again just at section 216.7, which is the one that's really front and center of this debate right now, it says it's a violation of the law to directly or indirectly make someone feel unwelcome or objectionable based on their gender identity. Now, at the outset, mm-hmm. we know that churches want to make everyone feel welcome, of course. They want that opening and opportunity to share the gospel with them.
Right.
However, who's to interpret what it means to feel unwelcome? You know, if my pastor is preaching through Genesis chapter 2 or Romans chapter 1, and I feel a little bit uncomfortable, perhaps, about my own sin, does that mean that my pastor has violated the law because I feel uncomfortable or unwelcome? Like, that's just absurd. Where civil liberties are at issue, especially our cherished freedoms of religion and speech, there must be precision in the law for it to be constitutional.
Right. You're listening to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, and on the line we have Christiana Holcomb with Alliance Defending Freedom. We're discussing Fort Des Moines v. Jackson. It's Fort Des Moines Church of Christ, excuse me, v. Jackson. They have they're suing the Iowa Civil Rights Commissioners and Attorney General and a whole plethora of people as kind of a preemptive action before the Iowa Civil Rights Code is inappropriately enforced on churches. So, you know, does the law state who determines what's bona fide? That's another question I had, because it's like, who makes that decision?
Exactly. That's another huge open question. The law is vague. So what that means for churches is essentially this. You're not going to know if a judge is going to interpret it as bona fide or not, or if the commission will interpret it as bona fide or not until they come after you. That's just an untenable place to be. Churches need to have the freedom to know that they still, in the United States of America, have the freedom to live according to their faith and to operate their churches consistently with that faith. This ambiguity is an untenable situation, again, which is why Alliance Defending Freedom brought this reinforcement challenge. We need clarity.
Well, the concept of this government determining for the church what its purposes are, just in and of itself, I just want to choke when I hear that.
These people
are going to define for us what a bona fide purpose of the church is? Is this the USSR or what?
Mm. That's absolutely not their place to define. I cannot imagine a more unconstitutional intrusion of the state into the church than when it tries to start controlling what a church says, how it teaches its faith, and how it uses its house of worship. You know, a lot of people like to hearken back to Jefferson's wall of separation. Mm. All right? This is a state vaulting over that wall of separation, properly designed to protect the church from the state and intruding into the church sanctuary. It's absolutely inappropriate.
And where is the free exercise? What happened to that?
Yeah, it seems like that gets ignored a lot by people who, they forget that clause.
Yeah,
they like that.
Absolutely.
That's inconvenient.
Again,
to them.
That's why we've got to hold commissions like this accountable. We can't let them get away with it. You know, even if they say, oh, that's not exactly what we mean, let me tweak the brochure, or let me do something a little bit differently. Well, no, this is how you have interpreted the law. You don't have the authority to pass the bounds that are set by the United States Constitution, the protections that have been guaranteed to its citizens. And so, again, this is just why it's so necessary that we bring these pre-enforcement challenges, mm-hmm. so that the boundaries are set and made clear.
Yeah. Have you heard from, have the Iowa Civil Rights Commission responded to this?
They have not formally responded to this, no. But what they have started to do is backpedal, which I think is very interesting. I think they understand that they are on very tenuous ground with trying to enforce this against churches, especially as it relates to their worship services. But what they're going to try to do is pull back and say, well, okay, you can have your worship services, churches, you know, fine. However, any other activities that take place within your four walls, that might not be a bona fide religious purpose. Again, just demonstrating they should not be the ones calling these shots.
Right.
That is not their role.
Right.
And they're frankly not qualified to dictate to a church what is or is not a religious exercise.
Well, I was just thinking, too, I mean, we're talking about speech, and we're talking about public accommodations. We haven't even gotten into how they could possibly see the employment aspect of this. Because in my mind, if they are this narrowly interpreting bona fide religious service, then basically the only type of roles within a church would probably be the pastor.
That's probably right.
Yeah. So, you got a youth director. Well, you have to hire that person even if he's gay. I remember writing about this when it first passed in 2007. They also included Christian schools or religious mm-hmm. institutions, educational institutions, and the principal and the teachers were protected. There were religious exemptions for that, but it's almost like any other support staff, you know, would apply. So there's potential problems down the road. Fortunately, I'm actually shocked it hasn't happened yet, since Iowa seems to be going that direction with, you know, with 2009 having our Marriage Defense Act struck down. So I'm surprised nobody's tried it, actually.
But some of this, we were talking off the air, some of this I haven't seen elsewhere, except it was something that came as a result of the federal Supreme Court's redefinition of marriage last year. So I was surprised to hear that they were going in this direction prior to that.
Yeah.
I mean, because this brochure you're speaking of goes clear back to 2012,
Iowa,
correct?
We're leading the way.
leading
the wrong direction.
Leading where?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. This just, again, underscores the supreme importance of keeping tabs on what your local city councils are doing, your local state agencies are doing. You know, because, again, this brochure was published rather quietly. And, you know, if I may presume to say, I mean, I think intentionally so, right? It would have been extremely controversial to have issued a press release stating, and oh, by the way, yes, this law does apply to churches. Oh, and it applies to your speech within your church. Oh, and it also applies to your house of worship and how you use its facilities. Now, so these things are undermining our civil liberties, but very subtly at first. And so we've got to remain vigilant. The church must stay engaged, must stand with those who are taking the bullets for the rest of our religious freedoms. It's a deeply concerning development.
Christiana, we're out of time. Thank you so much. Where can people find out more?
Absolutely. AllianceDefendingFreedom.org is the place where you can learn more about what we do and our spaces and clients.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot.
This is Caffeine Thoughts Radio. We'll be back in a moment.
Hi, this is Brian Myers of Myers & Associates. If you're involved in maintenance at a manufacturing plant, you know how costly it can be when a machine goes down. And if the reason that machine went down is because the electronic controls on it failed, it can really be problematic if those electronics are obsolete. Well, not to worry. We represent Providence Industrial Electronics Repair, and they can get your machine up and running in no time. They repair boards, drives, servo motors, light curtains, you name it. So if you need industrial electronics repaired at your plant, or if you have other industrial maintenance needs, give me a call at 515-490-2640. That's Myers & Associates, 515-490-2640. Myers & Associates, keeping your operations running.
Welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Travis Riswold of Modern Woodmen of America. Call Travis at 515-883-0029, and he can help you find the life insurance
you need.
So there's a little bit of news that came out this week about Hillary's emails.
Really?
Yeah, just a little bit. Unless you've been living under a rock or in a cave somewhere, you've probably seen the story where FBI Director James Comey said, we're not recommending indictment, but basically gave a whole laundry list of things that she did badly in regard. And
that's so, saying it mildly.
And then, of course, you know, Loretta Lynch already kind of set this up. It's like, well, I will follow the recommendation of the FBI. So, of course, she's not indicting. Shocker. We have somebody.
Somebody's on the VIP line.
Exactly. A good friend of ours, Matt Whitaker. He's a founding partner of Whitaker, Hagenow, and Gustav LLP, is a former U.S. attorney for the District of Southern Iowa. He was appointed by President George W. Bush and served in that capacity from 2004 to 2009. Also ran for U.S. Senate in 2014. And I think the coolest part of his resume is that he played tight end for the Iowa Hawkeyes under Coach Hayden Fry.
Now, I would like
he does some cool things. But
I
that,
would like
that
him better if
be
he played for the Cardinal in gold. Just saying.
Well, we know what Matt thinks about that. So
I guess he's still on the phone, isn't he?
Matt picked the right team. Matt, before we get started in a conversation, I just want to have you respond to this clip we're going to play.
Okay.
I did not email any classified material to anyone. There is no classified material.
110 emails in 52 email chains have been determined by the owning agency to contain classified information at the time they were sent or received.
I provided all my emails that could possibly be work-related.
Several thousand work-related emails that were not among the group of 30,000 emails returned by Secretary Clinton.
I thought using one device would be simpler.
She also used numerous mobile devices to send and to read email.
There were no security breaches.
It is possible that hostile actors gained access to Secretary Clinton's personal email account.
It was my practice to communicate with State Department and other government officials on their .gov accounts.
Hostile actors gained access to the private commercial email accounts of people with whom Secretary Clinton was in regular contact from her personal account.
No doubt that we've done exactly what we should have done.
They were extremely careless in their handling of very sensitive, highly classified information.
People will be able to judge for themselves.
We cannot find a case that would support bringing criminal charges on these facts.
Thank you. Thank you.
To be clear, this is not to suggest that in similar circumstances, a person who engaged in this activity would face no consequences.
Americans will find that, interesting, and I look forward to having a discussion about that.
All right. Really?
Yeah. That was from Reason Magazine. They put that montage together. Matt, thoughts?
Well, there's a lot there. The first thought I have is that, Jim Comey, I know him. He and I served in the Department of Justice together, and he was the Deputy Attorney General when I was the U.S. Attorney. And so, I have a lot of respect for Jim, and I'll say that first of all. But it is a stark contrast. And what she has said over the last, really since last March, and what the FBI found. And anybody that thinks this is over is going to be surprised when they find out that she is not out of the woods yet. And I'll tell you two things that are hanging out there that are a bigger deal maybe even than this email situation. First is the lying to Congress under oath, which we heard about right at the beginning when Chaffetz was asking questions of Comey in the first round. The second thing is that he used language that I'm very familiar with, which is, being unwilling to confirm or deny the existence of an ongoing investigation, which confirms that there is an ongoing investigation of the Clinton Foundation and the State Department and issues of public corruption. So, don't be surprised if in the upcoming weeks and months, Jim Comey stands up again, now with the credibility of his testimony and his press conference, and delivers what feels like a very similar indictment, but at the same time recommends, because now everyone in the system's hands are tied. So it's going to be very interesting to watch this play out. But listen, this is not... Hillary Clinton lied to the American people. She lied to the American people in connection with the reason for the Benghazi attack. Mm-hmm. And, this is a pattern that folks should expect if she's ultimately president of the United States.
So as a former prosecutor, would you have recommended, was this something that you would have pursued indictment on?
Yeah, in the Wednesday edition of USA Today, I wrote that I'm a reasonable prosecutor and I would have indicted. Jim Comey laid out essentially why he believed her mishandling of classified information wasn't intentional, and laid out the case as to why no one has ever been prosecuted for gross negligence. Reasonable prosecutors can disagree as to how the facts play out. The intentional mishandling of classified information, you have to infer behavior, and the very existence of a private email server was one of many intentional acts that she did in connection with the mishandling. And the gross negligence standard, you know, I understand that very few, if any, have been prosecuted under 793F of 18 USC, but at the same time, you know, this is the fact pattern that should be put in front of at least a grand jury to make a charging decision.
Exactly.
That's what really bothered me about Jim. And again, I have a lot of respect for Jim Comey. I know him, and I know him to be the consummate professional, but I just am very, very surprised that he was, you know, not only did he say we're not going to recommend, but essentially nobody's going to charge this because I'm going to throw down a marker that says no reasonable prosecutor would take this case. And I just don't think that was his role as FBI director.
Right. Well, it seemed like my first thought is you do realize you're not her defense attorney, right? Because that seems like something a defense attorney would say, not the director of the FBI.
Yeah, he was throwing down a challenge, and essentially, you know, people like myself and another former federal prosecutor by the name of Rudy Giuliani took the contrary view of what a reasonable prosecutor would do. But I understand that to some extent, it all depends on kind of what lens you look at this situation through. But you know, fundamentally, we had a Secretary of State who did mishandle classified information, and that's one of the things that is going to be played out for the rest of our history, whether or not Hillary Clinton is the next president, is that Jim Comey said she violated the law. She and others violated the law, and there's no way getting around that.
Well, Matt, go back to this issue of intent. You know, it help us to understand where the legal bar here is. The first question I had when it was suggested that there was no intent involved is intent to do what? It seemed to me that Trey Gowdy's argument that she did exactly what she intended to do, which was to keep her emails out of the public record, that she intended to do that and successfully did it. So I was a little confused with respect to what the legal bar is here.
Yeah, and Representative Gowdy did a really good job sort of highlighting the legal analysis on that and demonstrating that it isn't as clear-cut as maybe Director Comey was presenting. But you know, fundamentally, Director Comey was saying one thing that was inconsistent with what all of us and your listeners know, which is, kind of ignorance of the law is no excuse, right? We've heard that for a million times.
Right.
And Jim Comey is saying that essentially she didn't, know she was violating the law when she sent these emails, and B, she didn't know that the law existed, so that therefore she can't be charged. I find that to be putting a little bit of the American system of justice on its head, because there are so many federal laws now, and there are so many state laws, many of which, you know, people violate every day unknowingly, many times being charged ultimately with crimes. That, I mean, this is a real challenge to the American system of justice, and it pretty much have just created what I would describe as the Comey Doctrine, where if you, from the moment that you're, you know, sort of accused of a crime, if you take the position, well, I didn't know that was against the law and I didn't know I was doing anything wrong, then you won't be prosecuted under these less than intentional statutes like gross negligence or just knowledge.
Yeah, there's some poor sailor, I guess, that's sitting in jail right now that I'm sure would love to have had that defense. He apparently took some photographs of a nuclear reactor on a submarine or something, and he got prosecuted. And I bet he'd love to have this defense.
Right.
Well, and this is the other thing that I think your listeners are going to be interested in, and that is that there is, you know, a term called prosecutorial discretion, where you can't bring every case. Every technical violation of the law is not brought. Mm-hmm. And as a prosecutor, you have, you know, just think of it, and I know this isn't a perfect analogy, but think of it as somebody that photocopies one $20 bill and passes that off in a convenience store. Most likely, the Secret Service and the U.S. Attorney's Office is not going to bring that. But if they have a stack of 100s or they do it over the course of a long period of time, then, you know, it is much more likely that they will be prosecuted. And that was one of the main arguments that Jim Comey was making, was that there are not enough classified documents in this, you know, four or five years to justify a charge. And that sailor that you mentioned, I believe the distinction he made was that was a tremendous more amount of information than they found on Hillary Clinton's server.
You're listening to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, and on the line we have Matt Whitaker, former former federal prosecutor.
Matt, there were 22 top secret emails found. Not just classified, 22 top secret emails found. Holy cow.
I'm trying to explain and help people understand. I don't assume that I agree.
Help us understand.
I just see blood coming out of Brian's eyes, so.
Yeah, no, it was outrageous, and the conduct is reprehensible. You know, but again, I mean, you know, now the State Department is taking up the other sanctions, which Comey referenced in his press conference on Tuesday, and that is that many of these people will probably be barred from ever having a security clearance. And if Hillary Clinton, as the president, is barred from having a security clearance in the federal government,
how does that work?
That's a very interesting issue, doesn't
well,
it?
Can you keep the president from having a security clearance?
Listen, we have, this is unprecedented. And, you know, when Jim Comey at the end of his press conference on Tuesday said something to the effect of, under these facts, you know, I can't find a case. Well, yeah, we've never had a Secretary of State that set up a private email server and then exchanged, you know, classified documents on it. So, yes, you're right. There has never been a case of that. But that doesn't mean that this isn't criminal behavior, and it doesn't mean that it shouldn't be prosecuted.
Wow. Wow. It's going to be interesting to see how this will impact the, you know, the election. And will the American people's memory be short and they'll forget about this kind of, or it won't be on the, you know, on the radar in November, or is this something that's going to be front and center?
Well, to Shane's question, Matt, you mentioned earlier the possibility of some ongoing things. Number one, of course, the lying under oath before Congress, if assuming the FBI gets a referral of that. I mean, what kind of timing are we looking at? Will they deliver their findings prior to the election?
I think they'll be able to turn that around very quickly, because fundamentally all you have to do is compare what she said under oath to what she said to the FBI on Saturday. And, you know, I think that's a fairly easy comparison and contrasting. But again, you have to get inside of her head and decide, you know, I guess, you know, whether she did it intentionally. I actually think the Clinton Foundation issue is bigger even than the lying to Congress.
Really? Really?
I do, because there's so many transactions that we've seen. You know, some of them are in Peter Schweitzer's book. Some of them have been generally mentioned in the media. That, you know, there were a lot of transactions where there were donations made to the foundation and then official action was taken.
And we are out of time. Thank you so much. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll be back in a moment. Thanks, Matt.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Brian Myers. When I needed a better life insurance plan, I found it with Travis Risvold of Modern Woodmen of America. When I first met Travis, he wasn't like some other life insurance agents that can be pushy and try to get you to buy something. Travis just made himself available to me. That was it. He told me to let him know if and when I needed anything, and he stayed in touch. When the day came and I did need to make some changes with my life insurance, Travis met with me and walked me through several options so I could make an informed decision. Ultimately, it was the best decision for my situation. So if you need a better or the best life insurance plan for you, call my friend Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. His number is 515-883-0029. Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. He can help you find the life insurance you need. Call him at 515-883-0029.
Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Crosswalk Ministries with Scott Owen, who offers biblical counseling and conciliation. Give him a call at 515-292-7141 or go to crosswalkcounseling.org.
Well, we've decided to forego our typical news rundown.
Right.
Given everything that's happened the last couple of days and what happened in Dallas in particular.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to spend most of this segment, if not all of it, just discussing the tragic shootings in Dallas.
Yes, and to kind of back up a little bit, obviously, if you've not been following what's been going on, we wanted to address eventually, probably, I don't know how much time we're going to give. I found out about the Dallas shooting as I was doing production notes for this show. So that obviously made us shift gears. But there was a peaceful protest that was held in Dallas, and there's been protests held elsewhere based on the shootings of by police of Philandro Castile. Forgive me if I'm pronouncing his name wrong. And Alton Sterling. Alton Sterling was a homeless man in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, who was shot by police as he was on the prone position. Philandro Castile was in the Twin Cities area, where he was pulled over apparently for a broken taillight or taillight that was out. Identified himself as being a concealed carry permit holder, and that he had a weapon, and apparently as he was going for his wallet to show him his ID, he was shot by police. That's at least what the story we're hearing. And there's obviously, if the aftermath was live streamed on Facebook, which does not bode well for the police.
Right. Right.
So
my thought is that there was also another incident in Louisiana as well. Is that ringing a bell with you guys?
No,
I haven't heard.
I was thinking that there were two.
There could be
rather dreadful instances.
The two shootings that have been at least national have gotten most national attention have been with Philandro Castile and Alton Sterling. And Alton Sterling, I'll show you my philosophy in approaching these things is, there are people who say, why are you remaining silent? Because I'm waiting for all the facts to come. I don't like shooting off my mouth about stuff like this. I know it's shocking. But I don't until I know kind of what's going on. And believe it or not, I don't monitor the news and social media 24/7.
That part will be difficult for people to believe.
There's
bathroom breaks, right?
I do keep up with a lot, but I was focused on the Civil Rights Commission case. I was focused on the Hillary email scandal.
Right. Yep.
And so I hadn't busy news week. I haven't really had a lot of time to get into. I saw the live stream of the Castile shooting. Alton Sterling, I heard bits and pieces, some that kind of gave me some reasonable doubt that maybe, they thought there was a gun present. Now, I'm not saying it was a good shooting, not at all. Here's my, I think both sides tend to have a knee-jerk reaction. I'm not naive enough to believe that, police get it right all the time. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right.
I know there are some bad police officers. I've had interaction with police officers that I don't respect. By and large, I support law enforcement. I don't assume that I don't want to knee jerk and say, oh, the police were justified in those shootings. I don't want to say, oh, they weren't, until I actually know. And I wish the president of the United States would take this position as well. I think he's
absolutely,
I think he's weighed into way, he's injected himself in the local news stories
more than once
and has made them national. Folks.
And he doesn't have all the facts either.
Right. And this is unprecedented. We've never had a president who has addressed local news to the extent that President Obama has and turned it into we need to have a national conversation. I'm not saying we don't. There's definitely a disparity. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of reasons behind that. And we do need to have a reasonable, rational discussion with facts.
Well, to your earlier point, Shane, it's hard enough for us to make comment on the radio or on the blog. It's hard enough to do that in a timely fashion, let alone trying to make comments about something that just happened, that the facts are murky. I mean,
right.
You have to show some sort of discretion until you know what happened.
Absolutely.
You don't just blow off.
And here's this is what I was noticing when the Dallas shooting was occurring. I was getting news from social media about, I'd say, about 5-8 minutes faster than I was from any other source. This whole social media mm-hmm. phenomenon has, you know, I've known about it. We've not had this in our nation. So like this before, where in a lot of ways, I think it's good. I definitely think it's good, but I think also people, you know, sometimes they jump the gun. That's a bad phrase. No pun intended. That's just a phrase I use a lot. Jump to conclusions before they have all the facts. Anyway, within Dallas, here's what we know so far, and it's been updated since the other night, and it may be updated by the time you hear this radio program.
That's right.
But so what we've seen conflicting accounts, either 11 or 12 police officers were shot. The news is reporting 12. President Obama has announced his speech or his remarks this morning, said 11. This is Friday morning we're recording. Anyway, 11 or 12 police officers shot. 5 are now dead. When it occurred, they first said 4. Apparently, police officers died overnight. 4 of those belonged to the Dallas Police Department. 1 was a DART. It's their rapid transport. They have a separate police force for that. And 1 was a DART officer. And this apparently was the first officer who was shot in the line of duty with that agency. 2 civilians were shot. This was a peaceful protest centered on Philando Castile, Alton Sterling, that started about 6 p.m. Central Time, ended around 9 when the shots was wrapping up and the shots were, you know, dozens of shots were fired. It's the police and the protesters appeared to be getting along. I mean, even some protesters were posing for pictures with police officers. There was a lot of respect, so this is not reflective of those who came to protest peacefully. I think they have a reason for concern, so I want to validate that. Mm-hmm. How I do want to say, I've been very concerned by a lot of the rhetoric again and on social media that I've seen from the Black Lives Matters folks. Pigs in a blanket, shooting cops, things mm-hmm. like this. And now you have this happen. My making threats and then actually, you know, also having, you know, following through on threats, and the police, Dallas Police Department's is reporting that the shooter has been inspired, was upset by the Black Lives Matters, said that to police. Before he actually ended up being killed, he was barricaded himself in, and apparently the explosives from one of the robots that was used to try to breach the door killed the suspect, but said that, you know, he was upset by the Black Lives Matters, and he was intending on shooting white police officers. And that's just one suspect. There's multiple suspects, because I heard, as I was listening to the news, multiple trajectories. Police were, you know, shot in the back. It was not a good scene. It was an ambush, basically. Hey, we're out of time. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll be back in a moment. Trailer park, truck stop, faded little map dots, New York to L.A. We were teenage dreaming, front seat leaning. Baby, come give me a kiss. Put me on the cover of the Rolling Stone, Uptown, down home, American kids.
Yeah, you do that all the time. These were not the words I expected to hear when I shared with my college roommate that I had hurt someone earlier that day. I'm Scott Owen with Crosswalk Ministries of Central Iowa, and it's time to pause for peace. We know we're not perfect, but it is unsettling when someone brings into focus one of our blind spots. Blind spots, like the log in your eye of Matthew 7:3-5, should be dealt with as soon as you find them. I immediately took those biting words to heart, followed up on an example he cited, and purposed from that point on to use my words to heal rather than to hurt. Yes, it was hard to hear those unflattering words from my friend. However, as the scriptures say, faithful are the wounds of a friend. For those types of wounds lead to long-lasting healing. To get help with your blind spot, contact us at 515-635-5465 or online at crosswalkcounseling.org.
Hey, do you want to take advantage of the marketing potential within social media for your company or organization, but you're not so sure how? Let me help. My company, 415 Communications, is a social media consulting firm that works with groups like yours. Go to 415communications.com. That's 415communications.com. Or give me a call at 515-321-5077.
Well, we normally, of course, on the fourth segment of the show, do what is ordinarily my favorite segment of the show, where we tell a silly story and have a lot of fun with it. But this has been really a tough couple of weeks, and the last few days have just been really, really overwhelming in terms of all the things that have happened. In any case, I certainly didn't feel like it'd be appropriate to end the show on a bunch of silliness. Just to talk a little bit about some of the things that happened this week, it appears very much to many of us that we have liars and incredibly corrupt people at the very highest areas of our government.
Right.
In addition to that, we've had this dreadful thing happen in Dallas where we have a dozen, apparently, police officers shot, five so far, fatalities. Just indescribable. And last but not least, we have, here in Iowa, the liberties of the church threatened in as I see it, just an extraordinary and even fatal way. And we were talking off the air, some of these things, it kind of gives you the impression that everything is falling apart, and I haven't personally experienced that since the late 1960s. Ron, I think you kind of felt the same way.
Indeed.
I mean, you turn on the news at night, and there's just this sense that everything is on a trajectory to catastrophe.
Mm-hmm.
Shane, you...
Yeah, it's obviously I didn't experience the 60s, but I just wonder if this goes in cycles. It seems, I don't know, because it seems like we've had anyway. That's probably another topic for another time. But
sure.
But it's just this has been amazing to me this week. We have a person who's Democratic. Going to be the nominee for Democratic Party, who's apparently above the law.
And may very well be the next president of the United States.
Right. And, our guest, Matt Whitaker, mentioned that, she might be brought up on corruption charges or whatnot through the Clinton Foundation investigation.
Perjury before Congress.
But if that doesn't happen before the election and she wins... Then you get the whole step of she needs to be impeached before she could ever be, brought up indicted and then convicted. And we have never seen a sitting president, a president ever, be brought up on charges like that.
Well, it's like Matt
said.
We've
got some governors that's happened too.
It's like Matt says, we are looking at waters where we've never sailed before. This is an unprecedented situation.
Right. And then on the Republican side, we have a guy who's going to probably be the nominee who was just accused of child rape. I mean, I don't know how I'm not going to lend a, I don't know if that's credible or not, but just the fact that he was accused of it, that's unprecedented. That's not been the only rape, accusation made against him in the past, as well as just some of the other stuff, the Trump University lawsuit and
well, and I tell you what, I know a lot of people say you can't change all of this through political means.
Right.
And I know that's true.
We need a revival,
but
folks.
But we still need to keep doing what we can in that regard and praying at the same time.
Amen. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll see you next week.
Take care, everybody.